So now, here's where we are. We are at the point of recognizing that this quantum wave of possibility, whatever it is, really not only affects everything, but it really can affect us, and it can affect our bodies. And let me tell you a little bit about what's going on there. This is called the theory of quantum consciousness. Now, a lot of this is very speculative. I admit to you that these things are not absolutely proven. I'm just suggesting that this is what seems to be going on. Suppose that you had to be aware of every breath you took, every heartbeat, every peristaltic action, which you may be aware of if you're getting hungry right now. Clearly, if you had to watch all that stuff going on all the time, your mind wouldn't have much left over to regard anything new in life. I mean, you have to watch all the stuff that's going on all the time. Your attention would be so taken up with watching over all these what are called autonomic functions that you would not be able to take much note of the fact that the light just changed red, or to avoid even the simplest accident, like tripping over your own feet. To enable your mind to be free from these basic functions and yet still able to take over when necessary, because sometimes you have to watch where you put your feet, and sometimes you have to pay attention to your peristaltic action in your tummy, and sometimes you have to watch, you know, whether the light is too bright or too dull. Sometimes you got to do that kind of stuff. In order to be able to do that or not do it as necessary, requires a very subtle interaction between your mind and your body, certainly your mind and your brain. Now, we know from a study of the brain that the controlling structure for all this, for these autonomic functions, is located in the brain stem. It's called the reticular activating system, or the RAS. And the brain stem refers to a collection of these nervous structures found at the base of the brain, and the RAS is a diffuse collection of neurons found within the core of that stem. Now, in the interaction between the ordinary nervous system and the autonomic nervous system, there is a kind of an interaction there. That's where quantum physics seems to have an effect. It seems to suggest how consciousness can become autonomic when it needs to be, and not be so when it doesn't need to be. So we have to kind of imagine that there's a nerve signal from an organ, say from your heart, that passes along a nerve to the brainstem, and then there's a return signal which beams from the brainstem back to the heart. This return signal acts as a kind of a regulator. It's like a little traffic cop, and it causes the heart to be faster or slow down, for example. Normally, we're not aware, conscious of this exchange of signals. They are what are called autonomic. But, you know, there are people who practice getting conscious of those signals. They're called yogis. And yoga is a way of actually learning to gain control of that. We're going to talk a little bit more about that later on. But right now, let's just look at this very simple thing, because it tells us something about how consciousness actually works. First, we have to think of the action of being consciousness itself is at a very primitive level, say at the level of a single neuron. And here a neuron in the RAS, in the RAS, knows of the signal from the heart and it sends a signal back to the heart muscle. By know, I mean that an act of consciousness has occurred in which some complementary choice was made and the quantum wave of possibility associated with it has been altered suddenly by the act of observation. This we might call popping the quantum wave. I often use the word quiff to stand for the quantum wave of the possibility. So I call it popping the quiff. So you can imagine that we're popping the quiff all the time in order to gain control over our hearts, for example. Okay, so each possibility in the quantum wave of possibility or in the quiff represents a possible observation of something that could take place. We already talked about that before. So if the quiff is not popped, then no return signal is generated from the brain and the heart receives no message to slow down or speed up. So the problem is that the neuron simply notes or fails to note the incoming signal. By the act of noting, the neuron alters the quiff suddenly and irreversibly, and this change introduces an interaction of enzymes within a neuron, as well as the protein gate structures that are embedded with the neuron's membrane, associated with the neuron firing, and all that blah, blah, blah goes on. A yogi in yoga has probably developed a very unusual RAS system of neurons that can actually refuse to take notice of messages coming from the heart. This altered consciousness may be the key to this remarkable talent. The yogi actually puts his mind into an altered state of awareness, which probably is quite difficult to achieve. But under its sway, the RAS neuron remains in a state of consciousness in which it both, hear this, both has and has not fired at the same time. A kind of quantum paradox. Woo, 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 woo. It's Twilight Zone. Yeah, it's just like the old Newcomb paradox. It's this principle of complementarity again. He's just decided not to note. Okay? That's a very strange thing, but just imagine that now, okay? So the yogi has learned to not take note of the situation in which both possibilities occur simultaneously. This produces a different physical state that may even resemble a kind of sleep or meditation, a hibernation, maybe even death. This new state of awareness cannot be achieved without focusing awareness on something else, usually an image, a distant shore, perhaps, or some other peaceful scene. Although it's possible, I think, for these yogis, because they've learned to do this so well, to just simply let go. And that letting go, maybe the action of letting go, allows both the neuron to fire and not fire simultaneously to be present. So after much practice, this non-noting of what's going on seems to occur, and they're able to achieve it. Now, inside the yogi's brain probably lies some kind of secret observer, although we've looked inside, we never found one, but let's just imagine that there's a field of consciousness in there that chooses. I don't know what it looks like, but suppose that's there. This same observer lies inside of each of our brains, and in fact, he must be in every neuron of every cell of the body. This observer chooses to take note or not to take note of the possible events bombarding our nervous system every billionth of a second. So uncertainty is always associated with the actions of this little tiny quantum physical observer, and the result of observing action is to produce a change in the state of the neuron. It either fires or doesn't fire. That reflects this. This might be happening at the level of a little tiny enzyme in a long complex protein molecule, for example, or it could be happening somewhere else. And there might be two possible configurations of that little enzyme, A or B. Remember our right and left in the quantum box experiment that I talked about before in Newcomb's paradox? If noted, then it will be found to either be A or B. But if it is not noted, then it will be neither A nor B, but it'll be A and B at the same time. So the two possibilities are A and B at the same time, or A or B, one or the other. So this is a way I think the RAS and heart are in relationship to each other at the neuronal level. Once trained, the neuron continues to notice itself in the mixed A or B state, with the result that after several such occurrences, the neuron is either one way or the other. And quantum physics tells us that this would hold if some outside observer were to even look and see the neurons firing and make a choice of observing, he would see it to be A or B. When the yoga alternates between normal observation of what we might call the supermind, which overlooks the A or B contents of these little mini-minds, and the supermind enters the relaxed state of A and B, then he creates in his supermind control of the heartbeat. And when this is taking place, it's very remarkable, it nevertheless difficult to observe, when this is taking place, the yoga is gaining control. And this is how the yogis can learn to stop or stop their hearts by going into these paradoxical states. Aside from the yogic ability to control the heart, we all have our hearts beating autonomically most of the time, the whole development of an autonomic functioning has really taken advantage of this whole business of noting A or B, one or the other. And this is what consciousness is doing in the body. It's taking note. But you can also train yourself to not take note, to go into the A and B state. And when you do that, you begin to enter into what are called extraordinary states of consciousness. And these extraordinary states can lead into some really interesting new possibilities, even the possibility of time travel. And we're going to get into that in a section coming up. Meanwhile, there's something else going on here. How is it possible that I can take note of A and B, that is, the neuron firing and not firing at the same time? I mean, your mind automatically says, it's got to be one or the other, got to be one or the other, got to be one or the other. And here I'm saying, telling you, that it's possible for your body to be in a state in where it's both one and the other at the same time. Well, what's going on? Are you having two bodies? Well, not only are you having two, but if you let all that A and B stuff happen everywhere in all the neurons of your body and all the cells of your body at the same time, 2 times 2 is 4 times 2 is 8 times 2 is 16, keep multiplying, you're going to get an infinity practically, or a large number anyway, of parallel or alternate realities popping into existence as a result of you using the principle of complementarity to pay attention or not pay attention. And if you can do that, you're beginning to see how you can enter into alternative realities at the same time. And in physics, we call those parallel universes. And I'm going to tell you a little bit more about those in the next session, session 4. So stay tuned.
This concludes session 3. Our program continues with session 4. Do you live in parallel universes?